From high atop Five-ish Media World Domination Headquarters in Rochester, New York, this is the Top of the Tower podcast. I'm your host, Scott Five-ish. We are brought to you this week by Shively Labs. Shively Labs is a division of Howell Laboratories. Shively is a proud employee-owned company with over 50 years of expert antenna and filter design and manufacturing. Check them out up in Maine. We begin this week with a story that just started breaking on Tuesday morning when Cox Media Group announced to its employees and then to the world that it's looking at what it's calling strategic options for its portfolio of 14 TV stations around the country. Cox has been an unusual player up until now because they're one of the last groups that's left that has been doing radio and TV and even newspapers all under one umbrella. That even as the FCC has loosened the rules to start to allow that to become a reality, it's really something that the marketplace has been rejecting in the last few years, most notably, obviously, when CBS spun off its radio division last year to Entercom, and also with Scripps looking to sell its radio operations and beginning to unload a few of those, most notably in Tulsa. And so we're at a point now in the history of broadcasting where there are fewer radio and TV combined ownership groups than there have been in a very, very long time. You actually really kind of have to look pretty hard these days to find companies that still want to have radio and TV under one roof. There are a handful of old line, family owned, usually in one case at least in Salt Lake City, church owned with Bonneville and KSL, but largely family owned groups that are carrying debt and have a long tradition of keeping radio and TV together. So that would be Dispatch Communications, the Wolf Group in Columbus with WBNS, for instance. Down the road at WHIZ Radio and TV in Zanesville, which we just visited recently, and we'll be featuring in Tower Site of the Week coming up pretty soon. And then a few other examples around the country, the Hubbards in St. Paul and Minneapolis at their flagship KSTP Radio and TV. Sinclair, interestingly, with the group that they inherited in Seattle, the former Fisher Group of KOMO Radio and TV that they've kept together, kind of surprisingly, I guess, WINK in Fort Myers, Florida. But you really kind of have to look to find these operations these days. There are not as many of them as there used to be. What's the reason for that? In some ways, it's because the TV economy and the radio economy have gone in rather different directions. Radio still, for the most part, involves a lot of local production. TV these days has become very centralized, except for local news. The ad sales generally are hard to overlap from one to the other. There's a radio advertising team and a TV advertising team that generally aren't selling together or oftentimes even necessarily to the same advertisers. It's different sets of creative. And so you can kind of understand why a company like Cox is looking and saying, you know what, let's see maybe if we can tap into the value of a TV industry that's still growing. They've looked also at trying to sell off their radio assets and haven't really gotten very far with a lot of that. And even with TV, they're not necessarily looking to sell. They're looking at this point, they're saying, primarily to find somebody to be a strategic partner, perhaps to operate the stations for them, which could point, for instance, to a group like Gray, which has done that in other cases for other ownership groups, come in and essentially take over operations and centralize some of that. So who would be interested? Well, in the Northeast, Cox has just two TV operations left, WPXI, the NBC affiliate in Pittsburgh, which they've had for a very long time now, and WFXT, the Fox affiliate in Boston, which they got just a few years ago as part of a swap with Fox itself. There are some rumors out there that perhaps Fox itself would be interested in getting back into the picture and reacquiring for what would be a second time now WFXT in Boston. It's not all that clear to me that Fox is that interested anymore in a lot of station ownership. And of course, things have changed with TV station ownership that have made it in some cases a little bit less attractive now to some parties. If you are not doing it on an enormous, almost national level like a Sinclair or a Nexstar, it's hard sometimes to get the syndication deals that you need. It's hard to get the leverage to do the retransmission consent with cable that has become sort of one of the primary revenue drivers now for local TV in a way that it never was until a few years ago. So lots of uncertainty up there. We will be watching closely to see who perhaps ends up with these clusters of Cox stations. There are a whole bunch of probably very desirable TV markets that they have down south, where they are in Orlando and they're in Tampa and Charlotte and several other big growing markets down there. And of course, WSB-TV, their flagship in Atlanta, is also included in this deal. Atlanta is also one of two markets, along with Dayton, where they are one of the even rarer groups that owns radio, TV, and newspaper, all in the same market, having been grandfathered in. So we'll be watching that very closely as we see where that proceeds in the weeks and months to come. We'll be
certified to operate in Virginia by Chev.
WPEB, WPEBHD, Philadelphia.
Good morning. Happy Friday. Let's get you to the weekend as fast as we can with more music.
Yeah, so when your workday starts, make sure you turn us on because you're going to get more music variety and also fewer interruptions. And we're Jen and Bill on today's 101.1 More FM.
Okay, so what you just heard there was something equally rare in the world of broadcasting these days. That, of course, is WBEB 101.1 More FM in Philadelphia, which has been one of those very rare, locally owned, major market, commercial, mass appeal radio stations out there. Jerry Lee Broadcasting, LLC, of course, last week announced that it is selling WBEB for $57.5 million. To Entercom. Entercom, which took over the CBS radio group in Philadelphia just last year, and which already has in its portfolio WTDY 96.5, which has been sort of an adult contemporary competitor in various forms, WBEB, and has been verging more towards the CHR lately. 98.1 WOGL, which has been sort of competing with WBEB on the classic hits side of the ledger for quite a few years now, as well as sports, 94.1 WIP, and on the AM side, All News 1060 KYW and Talk 1210 WPHT. But wait a second, isn't there another Entercom station? Well, yeah, there has been WXTU, the country station on 92.5, and as part of this deal, it is being spun off for $38 million back to Beasley, which is exactly the company that had sold it to CBS not that many years ago. Beasley now will get a full 5FM cluster out of the deal because they will be able to re-add WXTU to their holdings, which include the former Greater Media stations, Sports on 97.5, WPEN, Rock on 93.3, WMGK, or WMMR rather, WMGK, the classic rock station on 102.9, and Adult Hits, Ben FM, WBEN FM on 95.7, as well as two smaller AMs in that group. So this really now will give Beasley full signal parity with the Entercom holdings and also with iHeart, which until now has been the only 5FM owner in the market. So that's one piece of it, is that it will kind of keep all three of these clusters along with Radio 1 fully competitive within the market. But it raises a whole bunch of interesting issues now about what it may change in terms of the competitive format picture in the market. Starting with Entercom, for instance, you have to wonder if WTDY, which has really been struggling in the last few of its format incarnations, if they're going to want to keep that more or less in that hot AC verging on CHR vein against WBEB, or if they might look to go up against somebody else, if they perhaps try to go up against the rock wall of stations over at Beasley with MMR and MGK, if they try to go after iHeart and Radio 1 and the urban market, or... And here's the other interesting potential with all of this. Does Entercom try to flip one of their stations back over to country to fill the hole that they're just about to give up with WXTU? They are keeping WXTU's current program director. She is staying as a vice president of programming with Entercom's cluster. So that raises an interesting possibility there. There's also the possibility, though it seems a little bit more remote, of KYW, which, of course, has had signal problems, even for being a 50,000-watt AM station, of whether KYW might end up on the FM dial like WIP did, but would Entercom want to give up the revenue they get from a separate FM in order to make that trade-off? It's always a difficult call to make. Then over on the Beasley side of things, you have to wonder if they perhaps might now try to go up against an Entercom version of WBEB instead of a Jerry Lee version of WBEB. We know that under Jerry Lee Broadcasting, WBEB has been a very unusual station, in part because it has been a standalone in an industry that's turning against standalones, but also because it's been very hard for anybody to get competitive leverage against it in this adult contemporary universe. And that, in part, is because Jerry Lee did a ton of research on his radio station, much more so than most radio owners do. He was always a big proponent of researching not just the music that he played, but the liners that went along with it and the station branding, and especially doing audience testing to actually try to find out what made radio ads effective and what made them ineffective. And so it has made WBEB very hard to compete with. And so with Jerry completely out of the picture now, you have to wonder, could Beasley take a station like WBEN-FM and try to go more directly against WBEN rather than go up directly against WBEB? Could iHeart, for that matter, which has tried it before several times at 106.1 before flipping that to a throwback R&B and hip-hop format, would they try to go up against what they might perceive as a weakened WBEB? So a few words about Jerry Lee before we move on from this particular piece of it. We have to, first of all, praise Jerry for all of the leadership that he's shown in the radio industry and, of course, just for his survivorship, for being there as a 55-year, rather, owner of a radio station. He put that station on the air with partners in 1963, and he kept it going right up until one of those partners, Dave Kurtz, died a few years ago, and that in some ways has kind of been the downfall of all of this, because Dave Kurtz died right at the peak of the market, and in order for Jerry to buy out his half of the station and take full control, he had to pay top-of-the-market prices. He paid $85 million, $85 million for half of the radio station. So that valued it just a decade ago at $170 million. That's three times what it just sold for, $57.5 million. That, of course, required him to take on debt. It required him to take on Sam Zell as a partner. And it meant that about 3 years ago, Sam Zell took voting control of the board. And so even though it's been Jerry Lee Broadcasting, even though we are saying goodbye to Jerry and his involvement with the station, in reality, in terms of day-to-day full control and ownership, that really ended a few years ago. Even so, it is definitely the end of an era in Philadelphia. We wish Jerry all the best. I'm sure we have not, by any means, heard the last of him in the radio universe. And of course, facility changes will also be coming up there. All of these stations that are involved have all been out in the Bala Cynwyd area, all occupying those office parks right on the western city line of Philadelphia. And they'll be shuffling around. We expect WBEB will move out of its facility on Presidential Boulevard and go into 555 City Line with the rest of the former Beasley stations. And then the WXTU will be moving in with the current Beasley stations. So a lot of things in motion there right now. We're going to try to spend some time down in Philadelphia, catch up with all these studio moves, and bring them to you on Tower Site of the Week. And, of course, a reminder, you can see Tower Site of the Week for free every Friday just about on fibush.com. It's also where we bring you Northeast Radio Watch. For almost 25 years now, we have been chronicling all the ins and outs of station ownership, sales, business, technology, programming, formats, all of that, all across the northeastern U.S. and eastern Canada. You can have full access to it for as little as 29 cents a week at fibush.com. And fibush.com is also where you can pre-order the brand new 2019 Tower Site calendar and get some great clearance prices on the 2018 and earlier versions too. So be sure you check out the store and Northeast Radio Watch and all the good stuff over at fibush.com.
WSTU and WSTU HD Channel 1, Philadelphia, 92.5 XTU.
When we were in Las Vegas for the NAB show, we talked to a whole bunch of equipment manufacturers and vendors and attendees, including Mark Owens. He is one of the senior North American sales managers for Gates Air. We talked about their line of current transmitters and about what's happening with their AM product line as well.
We're here in your booth, and I'm looking at things that at this point could be FM transmitters or could be TV transmitters, and a lot of the architecture behind these boxes has kind of converged, hasn't it?
Yeah, it really has. Actually, from our FM line and then into our UHF line, we use the same power supplies, same switching power supplies. So it helps us keep costs down and help us pass that on to the customer. So we also use the building block format, you know, for our FM transmitter. So, you know, we start at 10 kilowatt on the high power, and we build up through 80 with 10 kilowatt blocks. We do a similar thing in the UHF and the VHF.
On the radio side, I know liquid cooling is still kind of a new thing to a lot of radio people, and in the last few years we've been seeing more of it from a few manufacturers, but you know, from you guys especially, what are some of the advantages and what should engineers be thinking about if they're considering making that move?
Well, we had a lot of customers approach us and tell us that their HVAC person was living at the transmitter site more than the engineer was, so one of the ways to keep him away from the site is to we develop liquid cooled FM, which allows them to reduce their air conditioning, the numbers of BTUs that are required, also keeps their operational costs way down. We can actually sometimes show them a real cost savings there, and the transmitter could actually pay for itself in like 3 to 5 years.
And some of these levels of efficiency now is so far beyond what we were seeing even a few years ago.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you know, all of our FM transmitters are getting, you know, 72-74%, depending on where you're in the band. You know, and then on the liquid cooled side, especially in the HD radio arena, depending on the frequency, we're actually seeing we can get more HD power out of some of the transmitters because the transmitter's staying cooler. So we got, you know, some situations where you would need a 30 kilowatt air cool, we can do it with a 20 kilowatt liquid cool.
Are all those early installations with the giant waste load off in the corner?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So you know, we actually manufacture the heat exchangers for the liquid cooled as well in Quincy, Illinois. So, so it's pretty much our whole design system.
You guys are getting very heavily into some of this SFN stuff now too, and this is exciting. I've heard some of these pilot projects out there where you're dropping in multiple low power transmitters. What's changed technologically to make this work now?
Well, you know, we're partnered with Geo Broadcast Solutions, and you know, they've got a new design. It almost follows the cell phone arena, and they're doing highly directional antennas and really focusing on a specific area for a customer that they maybe seeing some coverage gaps in. And they utilize our low-power fax transmitters for that, and also our synchrocast technology from Interplex that, you know, if there is some interference on the signal, it will allow you to move that interference maybe over a body of water or an open field where a receiver may not be.
And you guys have gotten very big into all that IP interconnectivity now.
Yeah, absolutely. Our Interplex line has really come along great. You know, we have 3 or 4 dealers just in North America that are all selling it. They're very happy with it. Customers like it. It's a lot of flexibility. You know, we can do everything from streaming to using it as an STL. We can multicast. So just a great, great product line.
Over on the TV side, I spent some time last week at PBS TechCon, and obviously ATSC3 is coming up on us fast. What should they be thinking about right now as they're making plans to be ready?
Well, the nice thing about ATSC3 is on all of our transmitters, we have power parity. So if your ATSC, your TPO for your ATSC 1.0 will be the exact same for your ATSC 3.0. So you don't have to buy more headroom in our transmitter to convert to ATSC 3.0. And our exciter is automatically upgradable to ATC. It's just a software upgrade, so you wouldn't have to change out any hardware. You may have to change out a mass filter somewhere down the road, but other than that, you know, we're ATSC 3.0 ready. We've been involved in all the tests. We have it on the air at WRAL and down in Raleigh. So we've been on the air for 2 years since 2016 with that. We've been involved in the test out in Phoenix. There's tests going on in Dallas, so we're involved in all that as well.
And we're going to see, I think, a lot more of the SFN architecture with that, a lot of more gap filler transmitters.
Yeah, we haven't seen, that's a lot of the talk. We haven't been involved in, you know, real life experiences yet, but that will be coming down the road probably as soon as repack's over. So
I get the sense that broadcasters are taking over the air TV maybe more seriously than anybody thought we would at this point in the evolution
of it. Yeah, absolutely, and I think they have to. You know, I think everybody sees it in the trades and everything that, you know, there's a lot more cord cutters out there. You know, a lot of the millennials now are cutting the cord, and they're actually realizing I can get free TV nowadays. So
a lot of channels.
And a lot of channels of it. So, yeah, there's been a big resurgence in over-the-air TV. And, you know, quite honestly, the picture's a lot better over the air. So
there's a billboard, if you head out Desert Inn, about a mile from here, there's a giant billboard, call the antenna guy, 45 channels free, and I assume he charges something, comes and hooks it up.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. So we've had some experiences with those things.
I got to ask, I know the question has come up, and it was a big topic of conversation about a month ago with the end of life on these AM lines and just the unavailability of some of the components for this. What's the future in terms of support for what's out there, and is there a push to bring some new product back into an AM line in the future?
Yeah, so, you know, we got to a point where we had to make a decision. Do we continue to getting inventory to service our customers was becoming difficult, and also build new transmitters. So you come to the point, do we continue to take new orders and deplete inventory? or do we stop now and service our current install base, which is the right thing to do, and that's the decision we made to do, while we investigate and start the design process of a new AM line. So we're probably not going to have anything new for 18 months to 24 months, but we're not exiting the business. We felt it most important to take care of our current customer base and make sure that those guys are staying on the air. We understand that, you know, people have to do business until we have a new product, so some of our competition will benefit from that, but we think we'll be able to come out with a really great product that people will want.
Competition's healthy. Everybody needs to be pushing everybody.
Absolutely.
Mark Owens, thank you so much for taking some time to talk with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me join you.
And that's it for this week's edition of Top of the Tower, the Fivebush Media Podcast. Remember, you can find so much more at fivebush.com, including the 2019 Tower Site Calendar, now available for pre-ordering, as well as the 2018 edition and the opportunity to subscribe to Northeast Radio Watch. And we are brought to you this week by Shively Labs. Shively Labs is a division of Howell Laboratories. Shively is a proud employee-owned company with over 50 years of expert antenna and filter design and manufacturing. Thanks for listening. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Top of the Tower.